have some kind of fucking Crown Victoria or LTD something, right? Right. And it looks like he has, from the fucking front to the back on the driver's side, it looks like he's just put it on the guardrail and just... I don't see how the door's open.
Man.
And it's just, and like part of the bumper was hanging down. And I see him. He's just rolling down Second Avenue. I fucking laughed. I laughed so hard.
Do you remember? Oh, I would have forgotten. Do you remember the guy that like jogs by the comic strip every night in like a negligee?
Oh, the rollerblader.
Rollerblade guy?
Yeah, and in tutus. Yeah, yeah. And his hair. Yeah,
like
yeah.
He's got a sheet on, like a dress and a belt. Yeah. And he's like roller discoing down Second Avenue.
I haven't seen him in years.
Oh, really?
He was there. See him pretty regularly every day. You were out there.
Every day. Oh, my God. You couldn't miss him. He loved it. You know? I remember one time
he was doing it for us.
I remember standing, I'm waiting across the street. Yeah, I'm waiting across the street one night, and these kids. I walk up on these kids, and the two of them are talking, three or four of them maybe, and they're in their 20s, and they've obviously just moved there. And they're like, I literally walk up on them, and I'm going across to the strip, Second Avenue, waiting on the line, and they're like, it's just so interesting. I mean, just every day you just see something crazy. It's just absolutely, I'm just really going to enjoy living here. This is just going to be the greatest thing. And I play right when I know shit. I look up, and here he comes. And so I just lean into their conversation. I go, like this?
And he just rolls.
And they're like, he just, oh, yeah, and he waves. I'm like, dude! You know what I mean? So, and they were like, yeah, you know, like,
yes. Yes, exactly. Oh, like this. Oh, that's awesome,
man. Yeah. So goddamn.
I may have to retell that to somebody.
You can tell that to anybody. Tell that to anybody.
Hey, everybody, it's Tall But True. Ben Bailey here with co-host DC Benny.
What's
and
up,
Vic
everybody?
Henley again in the house, as you already know.
Henley.
Once I come to Jersey, it's hard to get in.
Henley. He was like, I'm doing two episodes, motherfucker.
Exactly.
Brought me out of the city. I'm staying all day.
That's right. Hell yeah.
Sorry, I forgot to do the intro.
I think of a few things up in front of the strip and in that area. Like, didn't you sneak up on Modi at an intersection?
Oh, at the 86th Street subway, Lexington Avenue. I was going to the subway at 86th Street. It was middle of the afternoon, like 2:30, and I see him. He's just gotten off the train, and he's come up to 86th Street, and he's kind of looking around, getting his bearings. And I see that it's him, and then he turns his back to me. So I go running up to him, you know, pretty good clip, and just shove the shit out of him as hard as I could. Both hands right in the back, totally knock him forward. He almost trips and falls down. He turns around, stumbles. He's white as a sheet. And he's like, fuck you, Vic Henley. Fuck you. Just a New York City moment. He got off the subway, went one way, and then he didn't know it was me.
I could just see him being like, you're an asshole.
Yeah,
or some
yeah.
Shit.
He just looked at me like, God. But he was scared. He was really, really, and I was like, ah!
It's New York. It's hilarious.
Oh, God, yeah, I know. I literally danced down the stairs.
You know. A little spring in your step.
But it's always fun to see comedians on the street. I saw Gaffigan yesterday.
Oh, literally. Yeah.
And I was walking along about two blocks and noticed I'd been walking along next to him and didn't notice it was him. And then the light caught us.
Is he eating Hot Pockets?
And,
did he have wood?
he was
carrying some wood.
He was checking his phone pockets. Like every other crazy New York person walking the street.
Tell Jim his dad called.
I startled him.
No, you listen here, Mo Ham.
Sorry. No, but I startled him as well because I just tapped him.
Did
I just
you?
Reached over and tapped him on the shoulder, and he was in his phone and had headbuds in and everything. He goes, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm walking home. What are you doing? He goes, actually, I don't have enough time to tell you because I'm going this way. And he jaywalked across the aisle. I'm no kidding. He looked back at me. He goes, no kidding. I really have to go this way. I'm like, I wasn't going to ask you what the story was, Jim. It's okay. Wherever you're going.
I would.
Godspeed.
Oh, so, shit, man. That's great seeing you. See him in airports, you see him on the streets. Awesome.
He gave me props in his book for the Hot Pockets thing.
Did he really?
Yeah, shit. Yeah. And I didn't know it. Somebody
that
told
you
me years later.
Came
no. The
Hot Pockets thing? Or?
He was working on it forever.
You made him his first Hot Pockets?
No. He was a small child, and I started with a can of wheat.
He was a tiny little gabagoo.
You put a match in
his
pocket
with glasses.
and even then, he was
Vic
filled
Henley
with gravy.
Hot
Hot Pockets until he grew into the man he is today.
No, he was at Caroline's, and I guess he'd been working on the bit forever.
Yeah,
right. And I guess it wasn't working good. He wasn't happy with it, and he was going to give up on it.
Oh.
And I'm hanging out. I had already done an earlier show, and so I'm off, and I'm sitting there taking full advantage of their free tequila policy. Nice. And so, and I'm getting more and more into it, and I'm running into people I hadn't seen. Anthony Clark pops in, and all these people, right. And we're talking. And so I go in the room to watch. He goes, somebody said, go watch Gaffigan. And I hadn't seen him do a whole full set then. You know, I was always just catching the last bit. I'd be walking in after him at the cellar or something, so I would never see it.
Right.
And so because I'm hanging, I go in to watch, and I'm dying laughing. And he gets to this part, and he's doing all the stuff, and I'm screaming. And it really worked. It didn't really work in that good. But it's kind of a young, hipsterish New York fancy Manhattan crowd, yeah. And so they don't give a fuck about Hot Pockets. This is not funny to them, you know.
Right.
And so I go back in the green room to get my coat and gather up everything, and he comes in there, and he's going through the notes, and he's looking down, and I'm half in the bag enough to I go, God damn, buddy, that fucking Hot Pockets, I'm telling you, woo, you are on to something there. And he goes, no, I don't think so. And as a matter of fact, that might be the last time I do it. I'm thinking about quitting on this. Fucker, it's like 0 for 2 months or whatever number he said. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he stated that he had clearly been working on it for
a
while,
and he
didn't like how it was going, and it wasn't working well at all, and he's about to give on it. And I'm like, have you done it anywhere but the city? And he's like, no. And I'm like, okay, you're from Indiana. Fat ass America is going to shit themselves over that bit. They're going to love that bit. We're nice. All the five. I'm from the five fattest states. I'm from, trust me, they live on Hot Pockets. They open up veins and Hot Pockets pop out. Do not give up. And now I'm in his face and I'm so little tequila. And I just basically sort of kept lecturing him on with the God damn, that fat America will love this. Fat.
Was like, this milk thing.
Dude,
just
that's like
have
a
to wait.
Story. No, that's like one of the greatest.
That's
like,
awesome.
Wow.
But I didn't. Someone read his book, or someone heard him in an interview. And I might be embellishing for comedic effect. But he always says that it was me, like getting on his ass and telling him, "No, goddamn it, that's
keep
funny."
It.
And America will like this.
That is
if you've
great.
Only tried it in New York, it's not. You haven't really tried it yet. That joke is evergreen, universal. 99% of the country. You're in 1%. You're in Manhattan. You know. And he's like, and then the rest is history.
Wow.
I was just waiting for
did you I was waiting for the wood part.
I can't do it. I guess
I was waiting for the wood part. How did you get to the wood part?
I like wood. I like milk and a chow.
That's good, man.
I know I've never
wow,
not enjoyed
Gaffigan
him.
It's funny. You just do an impression of him.
Yes.
It kills.
It's so, you know.
He's funny, man. He's funny.
So he, one of the first times I met him at the cellar, he was next, and we were just tag teaming. It was probably like at late night, and so like we would be, you know. And so I have to, and so I see him come in, and I don't know him. So I just figured it was him. But I see the comic come through the door and go over and sit where we would sit or stand. Yes, exactly. Glowing,
albino.
Glowing. Yes, exactly. and I'm wrapping it up, and I'm like, well, all right, let me. I go, well, who's next? And he just goes, I am. And I go, okay, I am. What's your name? So I can tell the audience who you are. And he goes, you don't know. I can't do his voice, but he goes, you don't know. I saw that was Kermit the Frog.
Please. Kermit the Frog. It's great.
So, but he says, it's me. And he says, I am, and it's me. And he says something else like, you don't know who I am. And I'm like, are you Jesus? You know, because after the third one, I'm like, is this the Holy Trinity or something? And then he was giggling. And I saw him. He was enjoying it. And he leaned forward and he goes, Jim Gaffigan. So I was like, oh, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. But I'll just know who's next. I am.
Dude, I never talked to him that much or whatever. But I had this book that I was taking around. And I was like,
shopping around to sell, you mean?
Shopping around to sell. Right. And I was like, let me get some blurbs, right?
Sure.
And I was like, I'm going to reach out to him or whatever. And I reached out to a lot of people that I knew much better, much better, that didn't come through. And he got back to me, and he was like, you know, do you see Benny Funny now on paper? Or something like that. <you know? laughs> And I was like, God damn, man.
No,
that was
cool
as shit,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
He didn't have to do that. That was cool as shit.
Oh, my God. You know? We were sitting doing a show down at Sirius one day, a panel show, and he was there, and Daryl Hammond was there.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, because it was right when Gaffigan had just started doing the Colonel Sanders, and then it spurned Daryl Hammond.
The Colonel
You know, the Colonel Sanders commercials.
He was one
of the Colonel Sanders. They kept changing. It was Norm MacDonald. It was Daryl Hammond first, and then it went to Norm, and then it went to Gaffigan, and then it went to Rob Riggle. And it was a thing. They were changing it on purpose, using comedians.
It's so weird.
And Daryl Hammond knew the whole backstory to this and genuinely told the sweetest thing about how he thought he didn't know they were going to keep changing it. He thought they were revitalizing this whole thing just so he could do it. And he goes down to Kentucky and meets the family, and they take him to the...
And
he told it wonderfully on the show about... And then Gaffigan is sitting right next to him at that moment, the current Colonel Sanders in the commercial. So he's just shifting uncomfortably in the chair and looking around, and you know, and Daryl's about to have a nervous breakdown. And I felt trust with those people. You know, he's doing this whole thing.
I met the family, and they ripped the rug from underneath my feet.
That was a great day too. I think
they gave it to this guy.
Yeah, that was really. Yeah, that was totally. But Gaffigan,
that's really such a weird thing, but kind of a cool thing, I think. That
somebody, some. I guess the ad.
You could tell.
Whoever,
I never saw those. I saw the other.
Then they went to George Hamilton when they went. They went with a darker. They were doing like a honey. They were doing
George Hamilton.
They brought George Hamilton out to. It was like a bronze chicken. So because
he's
still playing.
He did the barbecue.
Yeah, he did the tan. The tan. Whatever. Yeah, they dusted off the old George Hamilton his tan joke. And then now I can't figure out who it is because now he's gold plated because they have Georgia gold. No, this just started about a week ago.
It's me.
You didn't see the eyebrow lifted up
because no, they put the gold plating. He can't do it with the gold plating. I thought it tries, but both of them go up at the same time.
And he bingo, just went, bingo.
It's me.
Shit. I'm the new colonel.
That was a crazy day.
I always got along with Gavigan.
I love Gavigan.
But at one time, he said something weird.
He says passive-aggressive shit, though. He'll say something.
Oh, did he do something like that to you?
He'll say some shit, and you'll be like, was that demeaning? And he's just walking off like, oh, wood.
Dude, I had almost the exact same experience. But he goes to me, he goes, I remember when you were a real dick.
To you?
Yeah.
To you?
Yeah. When? To me.
When have you ever been a dick?
And I was like, when? I go, what do you mean? When was I a dick to you?
Right.
Immediately.
But you're not a dick anymore. That's the implicit part. That's what's cool.
And then
he just didn't say anything else.
Nothing. Yeah. Oh, and then, you know, a few minutes go by, I'm like, all right, he's fucking with me trying to preoccupy me or something.
Sure. Dude, so I got to tell you what he said to me. It was such a, and it's so, I kind of deserved
it. Wait, before you do, Judah said what I should have said. You ever later on, you're like, oh my God, that would have been the perfect thing to say. He goes, you should have said, I remember when you weren't. I'm like,
Friedlander.
I would have ruled him forever.
Judah Friedlander.
That would have been great.
He has some time to think about it. Yeah. Oh, of course, right.
So what did Jim say to you?
Oh, dude, I was in a very pretentious phase, I will admit it. And I was
you?
Doing
again, you?
Yeah.
I don't remember pretension.
I was trying to do something smart, like do something a little different. So I did this one man show. Me and Art Cootie split the hour.
Okay.
So right. Chris Art Cootie, comedian turned yoga teacher.
Yep.
Actor teacher.
Turned yoga teacher.
Yoga mite. Yeah. Comedian.
Writer.
Right. Yogi.
Father of Blue.
Yeah.
Blue.
Good friend. Good solid dude. So we split the hour and we're like, it was Winter's Cold Reality was the name of the show. Winter's Cold Reality, right? And then we had separate. This is why I said pretentious.
It's great, dude. Yeah. It was the way you did it. It was like, yeah. Winter's Cold Reality.
That's what it was. I still have a flyer. I posted a flyer. But under subheaded under that were each of our halves. So
you guys had subtitles for.
Yeah. His was Stoner's Notes. And it was like about a man drinking tea, smoking weed, thoughts, reflections, or whatever. It was whatever. And mine was
Winter.
Winter's Cold Reality. coldness of winter.
Subtitle.
We're both hunched over smoking in the cold on the thing. With
small
the
wind. Yeah,
contemplating.
Oh, yeah, leather jackets in the cold.
Contemplating the wind.
But mine, the title of my part was, and it was different characters, okay. And it was Pipe Dreams of an Urban Chameleon. Pipe Dreams of an Urban Chameleon. Right?
Urban Chameleon?
Chameleon.
Chameleon.
Chameleon. Not comedian.
No. Chameleon.
Yeah. Because like, of all the different characters.
Right, no. Right. I was with you. I was. So, I thought he said comedian.
Pipe Dreams of an Urban Chameleon.
Yeah, chameleon. So it was chameleon. So that's a little, you know, it's a departure from the shit that I had done. Right? So I'm doing it.
Haley snorted.
I just snorted. Totally just snorted.
Oh, that's a show first.
So,
we got to do something.
Oh, shit.
God.
Okay.
So, I've put this show up Lower East Side at Surf Reality. We've put it up at Surf Reality, Lower East Side, right? And we're getting good houses, and we're doing it, and Pipe Trees, whatever.
All right,
and
Surf Reality.
Surf Reality. Mm-hmm. I used to work. It was.
I remember Surf Reality.
So this was a Lower East Side alternative spot, but that, you know, just random comedians would come through and do stuff, and then there'd be poets, and there'd be this and avant-garde shit. This one guy used to whip his dick out and speak to it in Russian, and that was kind of his thing.
Right? He would speak to his own dick in Russian.
Michael Portnoy, who was the guy Soy Bomb on the MTV, that dude.
Oh, wow.
So who was the MTV Awards or something? He came out Soy Bomb.
He streaked across the stage, and there was something written on him.
He
interrupted.
I remember that.
Yeah, half dressed.
So that guy speaks Russian to his dick.
And now, I remember, is his dick Russian?
Their dick doesn't answer
Ukrainian.
Back. It's a little Ukrainian.
So it's Ukrainian, but it picks up almost.
It's on the Crimean Peninsula somewhere looking for a home.
Oh, my God. He's an alternative comedy genius.
Well, so he did his
speaks
thing.
Speaks Russian to his cock.
Dick, yeah. He did his thing there. Other people did their thing. Maggie Estep came through and did like cool poetry shit. Rick Shapiro was always came through there, whatever. So the night he's up, I brought my wife, and he whipped out his dick and was doing a Russian. So I get off the stage, and I was like, I'm sorry about that. And she's like, that's okay. I went to high school with that guy, you know?
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah.
No shit. No shit.
She's like, I've seen his dick. He's been showing it to everybody.
He was Puerto Rican in the ninth grade.
In fourth grade.
He was like, that's entertaining.
He's had it out all day. With every chance he gets.
This is the environment I'm in working on this show with Art Cootey. We're in this kind of intense, Lower East Side environment. It's edgy, whatever. So that's going on. So Gaffigan hears about it. I think Time Out New York wrote a piece on me, and it was, and I was extra edgy in it, and I'm smoking a fucking cigarette and blah, 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 blah. So Gaffigan finds, I guess, somehow hears about this, right? And I'm in the back of the Boston Comedy Club doing a set, and Gaffigan walks in. He goes, Pipe Dreams, man. Pipe Dreams. Pipe Dreams, man. Pipe Dreams. And it was like, ugh. It just stuck me in the gut. It was, shit, man.
Of course it does.
My little Lower East Side endeavor. Mm-hmm. And he pipe dreamed
me.
He
pulled that out on you.
Oh, it was funny, man. It was funny.
Those are always the best ones. Things that, you know, they're ashamed of or something. Or where you can bust somebody's balls on something. You know, yeah. Foxworthy had some truck stop tapes that he was really ashamed of. Where he, for like $2,500 flat, he just sold 40 minutes of material. You could tell he's telling old jokes, and they were only on cassettes, and they were only available in these truck stops in like Oklahoma and Kansas. And
right.
When he started blowing up big, becoming Foxworthy, the dude made a deal with Walmart, and they popped in Walmart for a minute. And then Foxworthy had to sue him to shut the whole thing down.
So it's just a guy who...
You could probably find a used one. Laughing Hyena was the guy's name of the company.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember those.
And so
they were like $2.99.
Oh, yeah. You know, and so I had done two of them.
You might be a redneck.
Yeah, well, they were...
If your comedy types sell truck stop for $2.99.
And so he... The man when the man filmed you, I mean, when he recorded you in the comedy club to get the audio, he also made you take a picture for the cover of what the guy said. He had license, and somewhere in the fine print, Foxworthy hadn't read that. If he brought like a box of hats and props, if he wanted you to black out one of your teeth and be full on hillbilly, you had to do what he said for the picture because he owns the cassette, and so you have to agree. And so Foxworthy, and the tapes are fine, and it's young Jeff Foxworthy, so it's good material that he wrote. So all that shit's funny. He is completely embarrassed about all three cover shots where he's got the straw in the mouth and one of them is ever polka dot square dancing yeehaw pecker. Wood hillbilly thing that you could even imagine, and he had to do it. And I just happened, and so because I was going to do one and trying to get this money myself for me, I happened to be in town, and I went down to the club in Atlanta when they were taping it, and so I'm with him in the green one when he's realizing that he's got to do this, and he's just crushed it. He has just crushed it in front of like 325 people, and but the guy wants to. There's better lighting out in the bar and everything. So as the second show is getting ready to go in, we're just over in the corner with all these flashes going off as the photographer is making Foxworthy sit on this bar stool and put on these hats and do all these things. And make all these faces and
put the hay needle in his mouth
and every bit of it, and I'm screaming. I'm like Gaffigan. I'm just roaming around the background going, woo! I'm just heckling the shit out of him. Is it really worth $1,500, Jeff? Is it really worth? So years later, he's blood red. He's a good sport and a nice guy. So years later, he had sold his first pilot to CBS, and I was at a meeting and we talked to someone. I knew the showrunners. They're really good guys. They're both of them real successful still to this day, Don Nichols and David Reimer. And they were going to get an office to work on the pilot. And they're like, is there something you know about him? He's so easy going. It doesn't seem like, is there any way? What, you know, any way? I'm like, if you could find those goddamn truck stop tapes, I'm like, blow those up and frame them and put the cover pictures on the wall. And the first day he'll walk in there, that'll get him. That'll get him for sure. And so, and they did it. They did it. They went out there like, Vic, this is Hollywood. This is easy. We can get that done. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And so they did it, you know, and then I had to wait for like a week. I'm sitting on this for a week till I know when the first time that he's going to go over to the office is. And they said as soon as he walked in the door, he looked up and went, Henley told you this, didn't he? Because he's the only one that was there. See, I didn't tell you. I'm not telling him myself. There's only one other person. He's like, you son of a
bitch. I do. What's the most, the thing in your career like that you did that you're most ashamed of, like thing you shot or a gig you did or something where you're like, oh my God, why did I do that fucking thing? I wish I didn't do that thing. And it's, you know.
It's this.
Today.
With you.
The past 15 minutes.
I miss you now with you and your pipe dreams.
And your smoking. And your introspection.
I got one while you guys are thinking.
Okay. You got one for you?
Yeah,
I got one. I think I got one.
I know
one,
there's
maybe.
Something.
I think I got
like,
one.
I know.
Maybe.
It's like, I think I've blocked it out, but it's in there somewhere.
I got a.
No, we're talking about live things. That's a whole other category.
It can be filmed. It can be whatever.
I think it's more. It should be. Go with what you're going to say.
All right. I shot this. This is quick. I shot this thing. It was a PSA announcement. You know, for whatever a PSA. So it's graffiti.
Hi, I'm DC Benny.
Greedy her. What is it?
Creator of winters.
Or the cruelty of winter. Smash your pipe dreams.
I'm an urban chameleon.
Me, I'll be okay. I can shapeshift.
Oh, shit, man. I love it.
Sorry. We just ran with that. Public service announcement.
Oh, what the fuck was it? I'm trying to remember. Okay. So it's about, I go in and it's like, we want a kind of street guy, you know, to talk about why graffiti's bad, right? And you're going to stand in front of graffiti and talk about what's bad. We're going to give you this script. So I did it. The script was horrible, right? It was just like, it was like the worst shit I ever read, man. And it's like, because it's written by like a, it's got to be written by like a 6-year-old Jewish guy. And it's like graffiti. It's dripping, drying, dreck. Like, it's saying shit like that, right? So you're like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. You know?
It's alliteration.
Yeah.
Dude, it's hilarious.
It was.
Those ads would have been
a lot
so
of good
funny.
Words.
Oh, dude. It's the
it's
worst thing.
Dripping, drying, dreck.
That's
you're supposed
direct
to look
quote.
Street.
Yeah, you're like a guy.
Like, I'm having a hard time selling this.
Dreck? Yeah. I said that, and they're like, that's what Murray wants? That's what's okay. in the script. Or whatever. So I'm like, all right. Wait. So I get this. I get this thing, right? So it's like not bad money. I'm like, all right. I'm like, they must have changed that. I'm like, you know, maybe I can improvise or whatever. And I get there, and the guy who wrote it's there, and it's like a Murray. You know, he's like a Murray. And they're like, he's like, I want it done word for word, word for word. I'm like, oh, Jesus. He's like, you're walking along. You're like kind of a street, and you're going to stop in front of this graffiti here. And it was like at some school park, and there was this building with some graffiti on it, and say the lines or whatever. So we shot it, and it just kept getting worse and worse. It was so fucking horrible. I couldn't. There was no way, because every time I'm like dripping, drying, dreck, dreck. Like
graffiti.
Who the fuck says dreck? So you know. And
graffiti. You're
graffiti.
Like saying it in his voice. Right?
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how you're gonna
graffiti's
fucking
bad.
Say it.
Right.
Make it
it's
real.
Bad.
Yeah.
I never saw it. I mean, I never saw
oh,
the fucking
okay.
thing. I never, and then I got a, I got a copy of it. Oh, no, I did get a copy of it, and I did see it. It was horrible. Whoa. It's horrible, but I never saw it anywhere.
Okay.
My fucking brothers are at high school, right? They're at high school for some.
Oh, this is good.
You know where this is going. For some kind of meeting of the school, for you know, whatever they, assembly. Where they bring all the kids in the auditorium for something, and there's some shit going on, and they're going to show something. They show this fucking thing before it, right? So I have no idea. My brothers come home, they're like, tripping, trying, dragging. And they just kept saying it. And I'm like, we got to get a copy of that thing. So I have been hiding this thing from my brothers for like fucking 20 years. And they every time they come over, they search for it. One searches
so
for
you
it.
You still have
like,
it.
I have it. I have it on VHS. And it's horrible.
Tripping, oh, drying, dreck.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's too damn good. Drink.
I did. I might have told the story of the first thing that I booked on the show already.
What was
the first? Well, the first thing I ever really did on TV was on Mad TV. We talked about that one episode.
The sketch show on Fox.
Yeah, the sketch show on Fox. Right. I played a security guard as a tiny little thing.
I don't think we've talked about this on the show though.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
But I did a jeans commercial.
Oh,
did we talk about that one? I think
Japanese,
we might have.
Yeah.
It was Big John Jeans, this Japanese jeans company.
I think we got to say it again.
That's something that comes to mind when I'm like, okay, I'm a little embarrassed about that. But it's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's really well produced, and it looks kind of cool, like a music video.
That's cool.
Because the star of it is a Japanese pop star.
Not you.
Not me.
Okay.
I'm a bouncer. I throw him out of a club. I had to throw him off a dock. I'm pretty sure I told it on here.
Okay. Well, run it, man.
As long as you're not dancing around wiggling
no,
your
no,
ass
I'm an angry,
jeans.
Scary guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Who's chasing him out
you're
of the
villain.
Ooh, it's good to be a cop.
Narrative.
But so that one's one that comes to mind. I'm like, oh, that one's a little embarrassing.
Don't you call it again?
Big John Jeans.
Big John Jeans.
Okay. And
that sounds so gay icon.
It does, right?
Big John
it does.
Jeans.
It sounds like something huge.
Another thing I did. Oh my God, what was it? Now I've forgotten. That was a little. Oh, the big and tall, the king size big and tall men's clothing commercials.
King size big, not just regular big and tall.
King size.
King
big
size.
And tall. High five. And the big and tall crowd goes wild. And they were like, do the crowd cheering. after Cash Cab had been on for years, I'm walking in the village.
Oh, that's what's great.
I'm walking in the village, and this dude comes running over to me and goes, oh, my God. It's the guy from the Big and Tall commercials. I was like, oh, King fuck, size. Dude. Nobody has brought that up in years.
Big and tall people remember that shit.
Oh,
they
yeah.
remember that shit.
Yeah, they're not spoken for. Yeah,
I got pinned into like 35 outfits over 4 days.
Oh, God.
I was
there
the
that
tall
many
guy,
different ones?
And then there was the big guy.
Okay.
There's an actor. His name was Tony Cucci.
Were y'all...
Oh, shit.
And yeah, one of the guys
strange
was like,
aroma.
So you're the tall guy and you're the fat guy. And Tony was
big.
Like, big. Exactly. Big.
Sorry.
I'm big.
Sorry.
I'm not fat. No, you knew.
You know exactly what it was.
He ended up, now, I saw that guy on The Sopranos. He got whacked on an episode of The Sopranos.
Tony Cucci.
Were they, the now, were y'all on there together? Or
we were on
they,
there together,
were they,
yeah.
They, so they didn't split him down the middle and you were in half and he was in the other half. You were on set together.
Yeah, we were there together.
Shooting these things with the banter going back and forth. From
dude,
whatever
I still
they,
remember it. We did it so many times. I'm taking up a new sport, surfing. And I'm like, and then I have a laptop all of a sudden.
Surfing.
I have a big size website. I can get big tall guy sizes up to 6XL. I'm like, 6XL? Who the fuck is wearing a 6XL? Holy shit!
Shit.
I'm like a 2, maybe. Not even. I mean, a 6 is fucking...
Oh,
that's
my
like
God.
Yeti size.
That is Beanstalk.
Yeah, that is Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, shit, dude.
That's your buddy who you sent to the trailer in that other episode.
Oh, Hump. What's
his name? Hump.
Hump. Hump.
That's Hump sizes.
Yeah, Hump. Dim's Hump
good
sizes.
God almighty.
King size, big and tall.
So those aired. Yours
those
aired.
Were on for years. On cable. Like for a cable ad? It was a national cable spot.
That's crazy. Oh,
that thing paid my... paid
well,
me.
That's good.
I mean, I did, yeah. I did well in that. And people recognize me from the Big and Tall commercial.
Yeah, that's fine then.
It's so weird.
I'm trying to... I did one in... This was so weird. It was in England.
Right.
So, and they were looking for people to... do your act in whatever weird location they put you in. So,
oh boy.
So you, no audience. They're just gonna
you.
they're gonna look at the jokes or look at you, look at your tape,
right.
And then decide what they should do with you. And then this is sort of in the vein of like Foxworthy Night, reading the fine print, and you're stuck with they're gonna put you in a field or make you on a paddle boat or you're in the subway in London or going to a chip shop and you got to do it, you know. But they were very upfront about this, the whole thing. They were looking for this very esoteric thing, and they were thinking of, you know, they're thinking of like Leary when he would do those rants and he'd be sitting on the rooftops in New York smoking and ranting. You
I
know?
Want shots of Cindy Crawford naked.
Yes, yeah, all the
Crawford sleeping. Cindy.
That's an encyclopedia.
That's
perfect.
The Hammer.
The Hammer.
Hammerpedia. Hammerpedia. And so. Right, and I think they'd seen her, you know, co-opting a little.
No MTV, CTV.
Right, no MTV, CTV. So even though they're way late on the idea, you know, this is like, usually they're ahead of us, but sometimes, so they, anyway.
Yeah, we're way behind.
I just catch wind from a guy that knows a guy, and he knew I was going to be over there working the Comedy Store. And he's like, you know, they're shooting during this period if you want to throw something at them. But it's got to be all stuff that you've never done in the UK, if you've done some of these jokes in the TV shows over there and stuff.
Right.
So I'd burned a lot of material at that time. So I start digging through stuff.
But they were filming stuff a lot over there.
Yeah, and I'd burned through a ton for 3 or 4 years. I went too much. And so now when that little caveat came into the play, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to dial it back. So I start looking back through the notebook, and it's just horrible fucking material.
You're like, oh, God.
It's gone. I can't believe I wrote this down. Why did I save this? You know,
I can't believe I used this
and
for
so,
six
any
years.
Of it. Yeah, you know. No, seriously, there was things in there. Like, I don't even know what this one means. This is, you know, and so.
Those are the worst.
Oh God, yeah. When I'd say do this, and it's like, and make the sound, and I'm like, what sound? The punchline.
Yeah.
I couldn't even remember what sound went with this bit.
Yeah.
You know, and
oh,
so
I've had those too. The mystery. I'm like, oh, I wish I knew what this idea was.
So, but it was good cash, and they always paid you in pounds. And right. I figure even if it airs, nobody's going to see it. It'll just be over there, you know. Although I work over there a lot, but you know, I don't think that won't hurt me. I've already got a good track run here, you know, going. So surely the goddamn is terrible. And so, the minute I get there, they take me out to a nature preserve outside of London because I'm Southern, so they're going to go with the whole hillbilly route. So they've got me in waders, full-on waders, with the Wellington boots, and I'm tronking through this fucking...
Wellies.
Yeah, I'm in the wellies.
Get in the river.
They let me keep them.
They let you keep them?
Oh, yeah. They bought all the stuff, so at the end of the day, I'm miserable. I'll cut to that later. I'm miserable.
Right.
But I'm like, at least let me keep the fucking wellies. And so
in the Land Rover.
I was mad, and I'm stomping in the mud, and I can't. So within 5 minutes, there's these giant reeds, just like any, like cattails or any giant, you know, they're not green, they're pale, just reeds that are sticking up
out of the water.
So they want me to circle around and weed in, work my way into the reeds, and then they're and going, then when they say action, they want me to to part them.
I got to be honest with you,
play
I love
yeehaw.
It.
So, I'm okay with it, really. I don't really care. I knew the production team, the production company, and I trusted the director. And I, you know, riding out to the place in the van, I knew enough about, you know, I don't really give a shit. This will be fine and whatever, you know.
Right.
And they're telling me, they read all the jokes I was going to do, and the only part they're about to lose me with is they're like, you know, we looked at the stuff, so if you just do the stuff that you wrote, that's some brilliant shit in there, mate, brilliant shit. And that's where I'm like, oh, no, it's not. No, now I'm just getting paid. This is going to be horrible. You know, this guy really thinks my shit's funny. What I sent him ain't funny. Now, if he saw me at the Comedy Store last weekend, that might be funny, but this right here from 82 ain't fucking funny. You know, or whenever. Oh, and so I'm in the
You're
reeds.
To do some old material in a river.
I'm in, right, in a duck marsh. A nature preserve duck marsh. No, there's literally swans and fucking, you know. And so people are walking by. There's little ramps all the way through it, you know, stairwells and ramps. I'm not saying it right, like docks. And right. They're all connected. So regular people are out here milling around the place. It's like a place you'd bring school kids on a field trip. If they want to see a heron or something in
a
England.
Great blue
you know,
heron.
Right. So egret. And so,
maybe an egret or an ibis.
Or an ibis. So it's a waterfowl. Perhaps even a cormorant.
To give me a nice
so,
cormorant.
So, only because I saw one last weekend.
To ornithologist no.
This guy, right? This guy.
I'm not.
What is it, a cormorant?
It's a water turkey. So I saw an osprey snatch a fish out of a pond.
That's fantastic.
Last week
it?
In Florida. I don't know who was more happy, me or the kids. I was like screaming like a 4-year-old, but I'd never seen it.
We were watching them in Hilton Head. We were watching them.
Yeah.
My dad was telling me once they latch on, they can't let go.
Oh, nice.
And so that they don't drop it, which is great. So, unless they latch onto a fish that's too big, and then they drown.
Oh, the bird goes in the water.
The bird goes in the water because it can't let go if they grab a big fish.
So nature still hadn't fixed that yet. There's no automatic release for too heavy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I want to see that now. I want to see fish beat fish hawk.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, God damn it. I thought it was so a minute ago.
So I'm in the thing,
and
as soon as I go to put my hands up to part the reeds, one of them snaps off and just runs up the palm of my hand and gouges the shit out of my hand, and it starts bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really notice, and so I'm sticking with the take. You know, I don't know this has happened. I've got people in the back, so I'm doing the, what about when your girlfriend sends you to the register to buy her tampons? You know, I'm going into some classic pile of shit bit that I had written the first 3 or 4 years of comedy. You know, price check on the tampons.
Fucking genius.
Keep it going.
Maybe do something on hold her purse at the mall.
This quote's a genius.
So I get halfway in, and it's nasty. It's really dirty. But they're all laughing because I guess they like the dirty part. And then they notice my hand's bleeding, and it's running down my arm. So they're like, cut, cut, cut. They're like, good God, are you okay? And they come walking over, and I see it, and my hand's all red, and it's running down my arm. I'm like, and it's not that. It was just like the craziest paper cut. It wasn't deep or painful, but the fucker wouldn't stop bleeding. It won't stop bleeding. So they're tying me off and cleaning me up. They're moving me to different locations, and every time I do something and touch something, I keep touching it because it doesn't hurt. So I keep reopening it and re-gouging it. So the whole all my memory of this day is me bleeding for 3 solid hours, stomping around in a marsh, doing price check on the tampon bit jokes, basically, or you know, something
dude.
And thinking, you know, God Almighty, I'm so glad I don't live here. I'm so glad I don't live here. Nobody will see this. And so if they take, so they had an after party not that night. So like 3 or 4 months go by when they got ready to air. I mean, they were going to have a premiere party, and for the first episode, and they were going to get everybody together and watch them, and they're in some big club in London with like 400 people, and So I think they shot 15 of us all together, and they were going to do three of us per episode, like little half-hour episodes, for so five of
just
them.
Just doing stand-up each.
Yeah, just, and everybody's in this same idea, right. Yeah. And so my buddy Dave Fulton, who he's the one that had put me
Fulton.
Fulton had put me on this because he knew the people at Baby Cow was the production company. And so
right,
I was in,
okay.
I'm in America, and he, because he was already teasing me, because I told him how bad it was, and it wasn't funny, and I'm telling the jokes, and I'm just embarrassed, and it's terrible, and I'm bleeding. And he's like, oh, no, now that you've left town, they're totally talking about you. They're you might not even make the cut. They may just cut you out altogether. Good news is your check will still clear. They're not going to take the money away. You get paid for the day, but I don't think you're there. Don't even worry about it. You're not going to get embarrassed. And then the night of the premiere party, he calls me the next day and he goes, oh, you're going to get embarrassed. They used you as the blooper reel. They showed you through the whole party. And they're like, we had everything perfect except one guy. Look at this. And they just kept going back to mine on how that was a nightmare day and it all got all fucked up and it wasn't funny and I couldn't stop bleeding. And so he's like, no. He goes, time to be embarrassed again. You're the blooper reel.
Here are the blooper guys.
Available at any truck stop.
$2.99. Or the what not to do.
Yeah, exactly. But that was, oh, that was miserable.
But so it only made it to the people at the party.
But the showbiz people saw that and pretty much, so my well went dry in comedy for a little bit over there because I think they thought that was a example of my latest stuff.
Right.
They didn't know I just went for the paycheck and went back to the knock-knock jokes.
I did a thing. Discover used to have a thing called You Spoof, where people would send in parodies of their favorite shows on Discovery.
Dude, I wrote for that.
I know.
No.
and we did. No, that's okay. But so they decided they were going to make a new one, another one, second round, and they wanted me to host it. So we're doing You Spoof 2.0. So we wrote this whole thing where I was on my way to host the You Spoof Awards. And on the way there, I get caught up in all the different, I end up getting caught up in all the different shows.
Okay.
The first one, I get in a cab to go there, and there's this crazy cash cab obsessed guy who's the driver. It's me also.
It's like a Jerry Lewis.
I'm in costume, like playing. I'm like, hey! Oh my God. Like, and I've got cash cab shit all over the place and a little bobblehead Ben, which is still in my office.
Oh,
right,
that's
here.
Good.
But so it's that, and then I end up like with Survivor Man, drinking my own urine to survive on the beach.
Yeah.
And I end up with the Deadliest Catch Captains, and like we do this whole huge thing. And then I'm Mike Rowe on Dirty Jobs, and then the last one is Mythbusters.
Right.
And the myth that we're busting is like tragedy plus time equals comedy. So I play both of the Mythbusters guys. And myself showing up late, and it's tragic, I've missed it, and is that funny?
Okay.
Once enough time has gone by. It's like, well crafted, the whole thing, we loved it. We put so much into it.
Yeah.
They never showed it.
Well, they also like, have those.
No, we're not going to do it.
Also, well, that would be the opposite. Like, that would be,
oh, but we worked so hard.
It. Yeah, it was great.
DC wrote on it.
I wrote on it.
Like,
great.
My friend Chris was a director.
Yeah, you just flipped. But you just flipped what we did. We were just talking about things you're embarrassed about. Now, that's the opposite of that. Something you're really proud of, worked hard on, liked it, and then just immediately out the door.
I might be embarrassed by parts of it, too.
Well, you know.
But that's the vulnerability of putting yourself out there and doing anything.
You are the last person. I gave you the VHS of me and Dave Attell doing the pilot where I was the talking bottle of whiskey. If you remember, I loaned it to you years ago.
Do I have a VHS copy?
I gave the only copy in existence I loaned to you, and then I just forgot about it. I don't save things or keep up with things.
Do you remember what the tape looks like?
No, it would just been like your standard VHS blank with nothing written on it. You know, it was just like somebody just bought a blank one. And
I have boxes.
That wouldn't matter. But
I remember seeing that though because you told me about it. And I was like, what?
We were hanging out at my house one night, and I was telling you about it. Right. No, I think we were maybe at the strip or something. I was telling you about it, and I'm like, I got it at home right now, and I only live like a few. He goes, I'll give you a ride, and then you drove me up, and I ran in and got it and gave
that's
it to
right.
him.
That's right. And, cause oh, that's, my cause God,
I don't really
I
care.
Forgot all about that.
But that was something. There was also, this was where way before Insomniac, Comedy Central wanted to do this pilot with Attell, where he had done so many petty crimes that he's wearing the ankle bracelet, and he's just got to do his community service or his 90 days or whatever. And so the only people that will take him in are like his sister and her husband, his brother. brother-in-law, and he has right. to live in their basement and be like their maid the whole time. So he's got to do their laundry and do their chores and work in the yard.
Is that
and,
not a huge
you know?
Yeah.
But instead of him doing what he's supposed to do, all the housework and whatever, he's just sitting there being Dave, drinking whiskey and watching porn.
Right.
That's all he does all day long.
Right.
And so the only
you're
other
the whiskey bottle.
The only other character in the pilot is the he drinks so much whiskey that he thinks the whiskey bottle starts to talk to him. And they built a giant, like, spent a few grand on making this really twice the size of a half-gallon bottle of liquor because it had to be bigger for television, you know, of a Jack Daniels bottle. And they put my face on the bottle and it had you know, they could control it robotically. And it moved its face and said things.
Dude,
and
that's
then
hilarious.
And so I would just be off camera with the script reading into the mic. Or I'd sit in the room and then I would just, they'd be working the puppet for me. Yeah, they'd work the puppet for me. And it'd just be me and Attell going back and forth. And then so sometimes during these rants, he'd just be ranting about whatever he'd be thinking about drunk. And then sometimes he'd be watching things. And they wanted to use that part of the show to throw in little short films and experimental videos and things. Uh-huh. And that was like the director's idea.
Right.
And that was the part that where like Attell agreed to that as much as uh-huh. he didn't kind of want to do it. But he was still on board enough with the pilot and the drinking and the watching that he thought every now and then one of the little weird things would be fun. But it almost ended up being like two different shows. There's the drinking and carrying on with Jack, and then there's all the antics, because he'd just go on a tail tangents and be running around and doing crazy stuff and ad-libbing, and I get to ad-lib with him, and it's really funny. And then you go to this more of a set piece where you're supposed to be watching these, and it would turn into both of us just going, what do you think, Jack? I don't know, Dave.
You know?
We're just
right.
going
just
back and forth.
That.
But it was really cool and fun and interesting, and I wish they would have at least aired it to giving it a field of a trial run to see if anybody liked it, and then cancel it or whatever.
Yeah.
But I told him, I'm like, it was like your thing. I go, I kind of like this.
Yeah.
And it was just, they watched it and went, no, two just joined it, stupid. Sorry.
Yeah. That's right. I was going to back you off the mic just a touch.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
That is sad.
There's
got to
be a lot of stuff out there like that, you know.
You don't see.
And
this.
By the way, the videos that the people sent in were pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
People made some pretty crazy, funny stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For those. Just back to that you spoof thing.
Anytime you turn it over, sometimes, if enough of the general public is watching,
that's
you'll
it.
Get some good stuff back. You'll get some
it.
Crazy
that's
stuff.
That's why you do it yourself.
You know?
Do it yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
Get
I have that. I should just put that right online somewhere. You spoof 2.0.
Yeah, you should, dude. You're putting up the two short films.
The short films, yeah. Well, I don't really have the rights to to put that up there.
The short film I did with Ted Alexandro about the first interracial ventriloquist team. It's called Horace and Huey.
Oh, my God, dude. That sounds awesome.
When
was this?
This is in, like, 03, maybe, something
Horace
like that.
Horace and Huey.
Horace, H-O-R-A-C-E, and right. Huey. And it's on YouTube. You can see it. It's about 11 minutes long. And
no way, dude.
And he's done
he's
done all PBS, Ken Burns, American Experience, you know, the still black and white photos of the narration, you know. And
so it looks just like it.
It's a really cool thing. And so me and Kyle Grooms and William Stevenson are in it. And Kyle plays like the militant black professor that's talking about no one realized how important in history that this thing happened. Everybody forgets about Horace and Huey, and they were groundbreaking, you know.
Wow.
And then I play the grandson of the greatest Klan ventriloquist of all time, who is shitting on the whole thing. I'm the villain in the little thing.
It doesn't take that much skill when you're wearing a hood.
They photoshopped a little Klan puppet on the lap of a regular Klan guy. So they found a picture of some Klan dude somewhere sitting in a chair, and then they photoshopped a little mini Klan dude right there on his hand, wearing the hood. And so, like, one of the things that comes up in the movie, they're like, "Well, if your grandfather was so good, why is he wearing the hood? How do we not know his mouth's moving?" You know? And I'm like, "How do you know it ain't?" But that's a real cool thing that I don't mind telling everybody. Since we're but Horace and Huey, it's on YouTube.
I'm gonna check out Horace.
It's 11
I'm
minutes.
Watch Horace and Huey.
It's
too.
11 minutes. It's pretty.
Even
funny.
Though William's in it.
William is the most miserable, curmudgeonly comedian in New York City for going on how long?
Oh,
ever?
8,000. Pleistocene kind of.
Since the turn of the century.
Sure. Right. He turned 60 a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Good for him.
So.
Good for him.
Wilhelm.
Yeah, man. He's a
grumpy fixture.
Oh, yeah, he works all over. He used to work in the park. He used to work in Washington Square Park.
He put me on in the park, man. He put me on in the park. I was like, I have got to do the park.
With Master Lee?
Master Lee wasn't there. Master Lee wasn't there.
Ah, Master Lee.
You want to play a game? It's called White Men Sit on the Porch and Drink Lemonade While Chinamen Build Railroads.
Dude, I did a college thing with Master Lee. I did it. Okay, so Master Lee, everybody.
Funny,
that guy was, oh, yeah, he was funny.
I know.
He was crazy, man. Was crazy. I did this. It was a NACA showcase. For it.
Blew a load on your mother's back. Sorry, go ahead. You and Master Lee did a college.
Master Lee. L-I, by the way, right? Or L-E-E.
No, L-E-E.
L-E-E, okay.
Yeah,
right.
L-E-E. Yeah, so...
no, it's Masterly.
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 L-Y. No space.
For those that don't know, his big thing is he would break boards in Washington Square Park, and he would do a big act leading up to the breaking of the boards. So there was a stand-up act that
I
led up to...
I forgot he would chop the boards.
Yeah, that was the closer. Right. He's in a karate gi. He's like, I, Master Lee, will break these boards.
He would do the off...
yeah. And all these people are like, oh my God, he's going to break some boards. He's going to break boards.
I.
And so they start gathering. But he won't break the boards. He teases them. He's like, it's like, I, Master Lee, won't break the boards. Yeah,
right.
Perfect. So he builds these crowds. You're like, God damn, when is this motherfucker going to break the board already? And then he finally is like, and he breaks the board. It's like, that was all right. The jokes were funny.
Oh, yeah, look at that. He broke the board.
He had a great
ice cream.
He had a great Master Lee act. You remember some of his jokes.
Oh, I do. Dude, he was funny. Master he definitely knew how to get the crowd.
Well, he knew how to get the crowd going. And then, but he was a street guy, man. He was a street performer guy. Yep. And then he would... In the winter, he would go to Venice Beach. That was his thing. He would tell me, he'd go to Venice Beach or to places where it was warm.
I never knew that.
Yeah, in the summer, he'd work Washington Square Park. He had his spots that he worked, so he disappeared for a while. But from being out in the street, he got very, like, he got dark, man. Like,
leathery.
You know, leathery from being tan. Exposed or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and he had, like, kind of street habits or whatever, right? So we do a college, NACA conference together. So that's when you're auditioning for the colleges or whatever. God.
So there's like, these are big little theaters that are big little theaters, but they're like 600 seaters. They're big crowds that you're going on.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Yeah. The conventions could definitely
be the college gig itself could go anyway. And these conferences.
The audience is made up of people who could potentially pay for you to come and perform at their school. So you there's a lot riding on a show. You get a good tour run. At a NACA convention.
Yeah. And if you book one, chances are you get block booked on a bunch
whole
of them.
Thing.
You know, you could be set with work for a year.
Yeah, anywhere from, or a little bit. It could be a 10, 15 grand. It could be $90,000, crazy.
So it was a good, we both do it. I think we both did. I didn't see his, he didn't see mine, I think, but we were sharing a room.
Okay.
So I go back and I'm in bed, and the beds are together. It's two separate beds, but we're in the same room.
You're in a double queen.
Yeah, whatever the fuck that's. Yeah, I'm trying to do the math on that, but you know that sounds worse than it is. But but I'm asleep, right? I'm asleep. The door opens and I hear, "All right, just come on in," right? And I'm like, right. So Master Lee shows up. He's got this chick. She's like, "Hello." It's like, just get in the bed. He's incapable of whispering from yelling.
From working outside.
Working on the street. Like, just get in the bed. Just get in the bed, right? He's like, don't try not to make any noise, right? So she's like, okay.
Keep it down. So, his lips are moving not in time with the audio, even when he's talking to her.
It was so fucking funny. I was like, I got to pretend. It's too late. I can't get up unless I'm going to pretend to be asleep. And he's hitting it in the state. And he's like, you know, there's the fucking squeaking. And he's like, I, Master Lee. And he's just like, he's just talking to this chick. I, Master Lee. He's talking to this chick. He fucking, it wraps up or whatever. There's a lot more talking. I'm just laying there. I'm laughing so hard, but I'm like, it's just funny, man. It's just so funny. So then they both go into the bathroom, right? And then more of it. It's like more like, I think he's hitting the bathroom. She spends the night. She leaves or whatever. Then the next morning, he's up early. He's out of there. I go into the bathroom. The shit is torn up, dude. The towels. Like, there's not one dry towel. There's not one washcloth. The shit is just torn up. And I'm like, that's what I meant by, like, the street habits.
Right.
You know? And we're sharing the room together. I'm like, God damn, there's not one fucking towel.
Was the girl still in the room?
No, everybody was gone.
Oh, everybody's gone.
Everybody's gone. I thought that ending would be funnier.
He hosed her down. He hosed her down and took all the stuff. Yeah, but he took
it. It was just funny, man. It was
he used every towel and all this
goddamn shit.
He's not used
fabric.
To being in a hotel ever.
Yeah.
It was new for me, too. And I'm not used to bunking right
now.
You know,
next
right
to my having sex.
He was always in the park.
Yeah, he was so.
And Charlie Barnett, right?
Charlie Barnett, the late, great Charlie Barnett.
Yeah. And who was Rick Aviles?
Rick Aviles, yeah.
Also dead.
Yeah.
Also
Charlie Barnett. Rod Reyes is his brother.
Yeah.
Stepbrother or half-brother.
Sort of, yeah.
Those guys were all in the park, always doing shows
all
the
time.
Park. With a major crowd, man. They would have
Charlie Barnett and
huge.
They had all kinds of
stuff out,
you know,
man.
William would do a $2 date or $1.50 date because the hot
game
dogs
shows,
went up.
Yeah.
But it was when hot dogs were $1.50, he'd get the crowd up and he'd have this whole dating game bullshit thing and he called it $1.50 date. And he'd take $1.50 and he'd pick two random people, a guy and a girl, and send them over to the hot dog cart. And then as they walked over and got the hot dog and walked back, sharing the hot dog, William would do stand-up for the 9 or 10 minutes that took. And then when they got back, he would interview them about their $1.50 date.
About their trip.
that
oh,
they
wow.
had just gone on.
And that's what, amazing.
And he had all these, you know, provocative.
That's a perfect show for TV.
Yeah. It was a really cool street performance little thing that he just fucking came up with all by himself, you know.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. It was amazing how, William would get a damn. He brought me, he was like, you want to work Rice and Square Park? All right. He's like, and he gave me some tips.
Yeah, he's got
And I got there, I was shitting my pants, man. And he's like,
I wouldn't do it.
And I was like, all right. And I fucking did it. And, you know, I wasn't used to, you do jokes here, there, they're like in the round.
You got
to
move
rotating, moving.
And get to people.
Yeah, and you got to act this shit out be all over the place.
Yeah.
If you don't have William was able to do it low key with the game show, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a whole
different
level.
He had all kinds of
little
tricks and hooks.
Yeah. But I did it, and then afterwards he was like, I was like, God damn, I was like thinking I'm going to go kill in the park, and afterwards he was like, you know what, that was all right. That was all right for doing it in the park,
night.
But I was.
I forgot who it was. Somebody once told me that they were
busking.
Somebody told me they're going across there and they've got a girl with them, and the comedian, I forgot who it was. He looks up and he sees William, and William's got his thing going on, you know. And the girl's been with the comic long enough that she knows it's William too, from seeing him host at the clubs.
Right.
And so they're cutting across, and they kind of have to walk right through his shit to get across Washington Square Park. And she keeps going, William, William! But William's in the middle of the routine. And so William, after like the third William, he turns around and looks at the comedian and goes, tell the bitch to shut up, I'm working! And the crowd went fucking crazy.
Working. Yeah, William Stevenson. Bringing it home. William Stevenson, man. Oh, I love that. I love that.
I wish I could think who that was. It might have been J.R. Haviland, I think.
William came into the cellar one night. He comes walking up to the table and he's standing there. He's got on like gray sweatpants. He's got a white t-shirt on. It's way too long and not tucked in. He's got a red hoodie over that. So it's like, he's like hoodie that's like kind of on his belly. And then a whole stripe of white from the shirt with some lettering that you can't see all
of
it. And then gray sweats
sure.
and whatever shoes. And he comes in and he just like comes up to the edge of the table. And Esty just goes, what are you doing here? And everybody laughs. And William's like, what the fuck you mean? What am I doing here? And then he's laughing. He's kind of like, ha-ha, that was funny. And then slowly he realizes that she's not fucking with him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a spot. He's not
thinks he's on the schedule.
He showed up. He thinks he's on the schedule, and he isn't. So he came in.
That's possible.
She said, what are you doing? And then everyone reamed him for his outfit for 10 minutes. And then he went home.
That's New York comedy. That's the New York comedy scene in a nutshell, right?
He didn't have a spot. No. He just had to fucking leave.
Just came downtown to get
That's happened
with.
To me there. I've walked in, I forget who. One of the girls there was like, you know, what are you doing here? I'm like, I have a spot. They're like, no, you don't. Whatever. And I'm like, shit. They're like,
They're ruthless.
Yeah.
They're absolutely ruthless. Oh, God.
What are you doing here?
Shit, man. I love that. I did a weird commercial. Can I tell you guys about this weird commercial?
Absolutely.
I haven't talked about it. So the guy who directed American History X, Tony...
Great movie.
Tony K.
Tony K. Is he the... He came to the Boston Comedy Club.
Yes, yes. Yes, Tony K.
I remember that dude.
Had a stand-up phase. He was like a very cockney kind of dude, and he had the stand-up phase where he wanted to do stand-up, so he'd come with this big black bodyguard guy, and he'd go up there, and it was just... weird. It was just weird, and people
he went on
were
the
not,
stage with him. The guy,
no, the guy, no, the guy would hang out, and, yeah, he'd go up there and be like, oh, you know, I feel like it's like the world is all crazy, right? It's all crazy, right? You know, everything's crazy, and people are like, what the fuck is this, right? So, and he's had the American History X thing. I think
sure, that's what's allowing him to do this.
Yeah, but no, he's taking his name off of it.
Okay, all right.
He's taking his name off of it.
Off of the movie?
Off the movie because he didn't like the cut. And he's got a lot of controversy surrounding him. So he's like, and he's out there, man. The guy's fucking out there, right? So I book a commercial. It's an Enron commercial.
Oh, God.
And he's going to be directing it. And he loves stand-ups at this point. So that's how he knows me from the Boston. And he's like, and it's just like your executive sitting at a table, and that's all you know, right? So this van comes and picks all these people up, and we never saw each other at these, whatever this audition was. I don't remember. It's just a bunch of different people. And we get out, and it's like this fucking prop warehouse in the, I don't know where it was. It was a long drive, and it was this prop warehouse. And then there were different rooms, like prop rooms that you would shoot things in, like a studio, like a mini studio, but just in the middle of fucking nowhere. Very strange. So then he's like, we get in these suits. We don't know what the fuck we're doing. We're sitting around this table. We get in these suits and stuff. And we come out. He said, Rod, you're going to just like, I'm going to say things. You're just going to like do them just like crazy. You know, just be like crazy, right? And if you're sitting at the table, and he gives you a scenario, and you're like, whatever. So you're just sitting there, and he shoots, and then he's like, cut, 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 and then he'll yell at somebody. He'll just come over and fucking start berating, and be like, oh, you know what? I don't do the fucking thing. Right? And he's got the big black guy there, the big fucking bodyguard. He's like, I'll fucking tell you. And he's fucking going off and whatever. So it's like my turn to do something, and I just like, get up on the table, and I'm like, ooh, ooh. I just start acting like a monkey or some shit. I don't remember what the hell it was. It was something, and he's like, I fucking love that. I love that. Right? He's like, I love that. You know, it was so.
See everyone do what Ben's doing.
Yeah, right.
It's so simple.
We shoot this weird chicken thing.
Totally crazy.
Yeah. But I'm like, this dude's
as
crazy.
I said,
crazy.
Sorry, go ahead.
We do it all day. It's like, he takes us to different locations. The same thing, he's yelling, berating, whatever. I never see the shit. Yeah, I don't think it ever came out. Joey Gay, comedian Joey Gay.
Oh, Joey Gay.
Not gay.
9/11 happens, right? 9/11 happens. So Joey Gay is like, do you want to go to this acting class? And I'm like, it's fucking 9/11. I can't even think about an acting class or whatever. He's like, all right. He's like, you don't want to go. So he goes to the acting class. Apparently it's this guy, Tony K and Brando. Tony K and Brando.
Marlon Brando.
Two nut jobs.
Right.
Wow.
So
poster boards with lines on two walls of the
And it's free. It's free. There's the first X amount of actors that get there are in, and Joey Gay happened to be one of them, right? So, and it's, I don't know, it's like 200 people, something like that. So Joey tells me he gets there, and he's like, where they're waiting for Brando, they're waiting for Tony K. Finally, 9/11 has just happened. Tony K comes in dressed as Osama bin Laden, right?
Oh, my
God. Dressed as Osama bin Laden. Everybody's like, oh, shit.
Holy shit, dude.
It's so, and goes up on the stage, and then Brando comes in, and they got a little mic and sits down. It's really uncomfortable. Brando's like, it's going to be Osama bin Laden. It's just mumbling.
Brando comes in and just eats him.
Just starts eating cookies. It's just like cookies. And they just kind of rambled for hours, and people were just transfixed because it's Tony K, Osama bin Laden, Brando, eating cookies, talking. And yeah, and that's what Joey Gay called me. I'm like, damn, I would have fucking, I should have gone to that acting class and just check that out.
That's
that
a sketch.
But crazy.
The first time I went to Edinburgh, I was at there's a big party at the beginning of it.
Yep.
Big fringe party in a castle somewhere.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And go to the party, and I don't know that, I only know one or two people. I don't know a whole lot of people. And there's a guy there who's dressed like Jesus. he's like hardcore, like you know, movie costume looks like he's meant to be, like a guy in a movie would be made up to look like Jesus. He's walking around the party, and like right after he gets there, somehow he just makes a beeline for me. I have no idea why. Maybe because I didn't look like I had anyone to talk to. Dude comes over to me and talks to me for a few minutes. And I'm like, okay. I talked to Jesus.
How art thou?
He moves on. This woman, I don't remember her name, redhead. As soon as he's gone, she steps over and she goes, avoid him. She goes, avoid him like the plague. Okay. And I'm like, all right. Noted. And she's like, so my name's this, blah, blah, blah. This is what I do. She works in London. She books this gig, that gig, blah, blah, blah. She talks to me for like 5 minutes. She moves on. A dude steps up and he goes, avoid her. I swear to God, avoid her like the plague. I'm batting a thousand in here. There's two people that nobody wants to fucking talk to, and they both walked right up to me.
It should have been a bit.
Oh man, that's wonderful.
Avoid her like the plague.
I think the first time I was there, Edinburgh. Now back to I was there with Dave Fulton. And we're outside, I think, with Greg Proops and Rich Hall, and we're standing around out in the street bullshitting.
It's a funny game.
Having a smoke break, drinking a beer, whatever. And I don't notice it because my back is to the wall. But, you know, just like in New York, they put up posters all over the city all day long, just tons and tons of posters all over every blank space about the shows you can go see through the whole festival. Yeah. And so Proops looks up. And they all can see what's behind me, you know. And Proops goes, "Oh, I see what we're doing tomorrow." And Fulton looks up and goes, "What do you mean?" And they start gesturing, points towards. He goes, "We're going to see that. Look at that right there." And Rich looks up, and I now step out and turn around, and this whole little section of wall is covered with black and white Hitler posters.
Oh, shit.
It looks like someone has taken a still shot of Hitler at one of the rallies and just blown it up and made a Broadway poster out of it. And it's because this dude is doing a one-man Hitler show.
Wow.
And it's called Adolf. And so, my favorite part is that right underneath it is from the West End and da 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 and all these English. And so the dude playing Adolf, his name is Pip Upton. Or something couldn't be more British.
Upton is right. Fabulous as the Fuhrer.
Yeah, and they're right. And all the quotes are in there, and it's really weird, you know. And then Proops points out, and he goes, we just have to go, we have to go. And he goes, look at her point. And I'm like, we can't figure out what he's pointing at. And he's like, it's at noon. The dude's doing Hitler at lunch. We got to go see the dude do Hitler at fucking lunch. He's not even waiting till 8 o'clock. So we go, and it was hard to get in. He sold out. And we get in because we were working there, too. So if there were seats left over, you can go and see it. And it was a wonderful one-man Hitler thing. It was completely great. Wow. It was super interesting.
Upton, you said?
Yeah. You know?
Pip.
But I'll never. Yeah, it was super interesting. And half the audience are Jews that want to go in and see it. I'm like, I hate to profile everybody, but I believe that's an Atlanta Braves hat in Yiddish. And it was.
The Yidel Deedle Dale Braves.
So, you know, but it was a, you never know what you're going to see in Edinburgh. That's for damn sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Hitler posters everywhere.
That's
Hitler
up there.
Hitler on ice. Is it history of the world? Right.
Oh, shit, dude.
Pip Upton.
Yeah.
Pip.
We'll keep an eye out for that. And Horace.
Horse and Huey is the short film. But that's Ted Alexandro. So
no, Ted made that?
Ted made it with his friend
that they James, later did Teacher's Lounge with?
Yeah.
James Hollis?
Yeah, there you go. Hollis James.
Hollis James. Cool. Yeah.
Didn't
yeah.
they used to dude. Do comedy together as a duo?
I don't know about that. Did they really?
I know Ted had another guy that he did comedy with as a duo.
He was part of a team?
Yeah.
How have I respected him all these years?
Oh, but it was just at the beginning.
Just kidding, Ted.
In the UK, they call that a double act.
A double act.
You're a double act.
They're a double act.
Part of a double act.
Yeah. The banana split.
Red Johnny and the round guy.
Oh, God. I was doing this TV show over there once, and they all came to see Benny King and Will Downing to sing soul music. They were going to be thrown in with the comedians.
You just reminded me. I was going to tell a Proops.
Go tell it.
You reminded me of a Proops story. When I taped a show there with
the
Proops.
The smartest man in the world. I forgot what his show's called, the podcast.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
It's just quick.
Shit. I know, God.
Yeah. Proops and I are in the back. We're taping The World Stands Up or... something.
Yeah, like
something
the store in London.
Right in London.
Yeah.
Tape it for TV. And I can't remember who the guy was who was on before Proops, but he's doing his whole bit is he's like acting out a dog puking and then eating it and then puking. And he's killing.
He's fucking crushed, killing.
And Proops just wants to kill himself. He's so upset by how well this guy's doing with the puking dog bit. He's like, and he's going to eat it again, isn't he? He was so pissed.
I just didn't want to forget that. No, that's always, I'm telling you.
That is so goddamn funny.
He did one of the Lou's Cruise with us. Lou Black had the comedy cruise.
We only did
it 2 years. But Proops came the second year, and he did his podcast, and that's what he did. He didn't do any stand-up at all. Just one of the nights, we filled the room, and he did the whole thing live and recorded
it. He did his podcast on the boat.
On the boat, in front of 500 people live. And I watched him work on it for 2 days. I'd go up to the internet room to check my, you know, email or whatever, and he'd be in there furiously researching stuff and making notes. And it was like a goddamn... I told him it was like...
Should have just done a dog puke. No, I know. Save himself all that work.
Yeah.
So what's the show? Why does he have to do so much research? Is it a topical...
He changes every single one of them, or he'll do something different.
Oh, no way.
So what he chose to do that week on the boat was just talk about all the shit that he was observing on the boat and everything from the always back to Hitler, but the captain was German and he had this heavy accent, so all the announcements were very foreboding. you will go to the lifeboat drill. If you do not go to the lifeboat drill,
organized fashion.
And it was literally just everything from you would observe as a comic working on the boat to what was going on in the news that week, and then all the different countries and cultures that are on the boat, and he read it like it was like Edward R. Murrow, Hunter S. Thompson. Fucking crazy.
So it's like a monologue.
Yeah, it completely was.
The entire show.
The whole thing. And he paused.
Holy shit.
Oh, no. I had never.
That's impressive.
Yeah. To watch him pull it together, and I knew because you'd have had to been to book because everything he talked about had just started happening Monday. And this is, he's doing it on like Friday night. And I saw, and he had to learn it and rehearse it and time it and pace it. And he blew the roof off the place. It was really interesting and cool to watch him do.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm going to check that out. Everyone should check that out. Proops is a funny guy.
Proops, great
and a good guy.
Yeah, great guy too.
And Emo Phillips was there that night too.
Oh, that's sure.
You know Emo?
Sure. I don't know him, but I know. Do you know about the Phil Saltanic thing when he used to do the trombone? His real name is Phil Saltanic or something like that.
That's Emo Phillips.
His real name is that, and he's from Downers Grove, which is south of Chicago. And early on in his stand-up days, I believe, and this is all correctable, but I'm close. He would go on as it was either Phil and his magic trombone or just Phil and his trombone. I can't remember.
Right.
I know he went on stage basically doing a lot of the same oddball emo jokes.
Yeah.
But he took a trombone case on stage and opened it up. And the whole time he did his act, he would take the trombone out of the case piece by piece and put it together. Right. And he's still doing his bits. He's still doing his bits. And at the very single end, when the last thing you do is put the mouthpiece on the trombone,
right.
he would then put his mouth on it, slide it a couple of times like he was going to play it, and then immediately start taking it back apart.
And then just put it away.
And put it away and leave the stage.
Oh,
so
it.
He would assemble the trombone, one, two slides, disassemble the trombone, and then walk off the fucking stage.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And that's like wow, early. That was funny. Something. I only heard stories, but enough people told me that I'm pretty sure it's true.
Wow.
That he was there at that same taping. That's where I met him.
In Edinburgh. Oh, in London. In London. The World Stands Up, right.
And people died. A lot of people bombed on that.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't organized super well, some of the audience being there and being in the right
No, those shows can get out of hand. Those shows can get that, yeah.
But I had a, it went very well for me. I had a good show, and I came off, and that's when I met Emo. And he just came over to me. He just watched my performance. And he just comes over to me, and he gets close to me. And he goes, it was perfect. And I was like,
great. That's great.
Dude. Oh, my God.
No kidding, really?
And then
he
was crying.
Oh.
And gave me a hug.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Like, I was then emotional. I'm like, why am I getting more?
Yeah, well, yeah, because it's emo.
It's very heartfelt.
It's emo, yeah.
What, I'm like, this is the most genuine guy.
Yeah.
And it's just all right out there.
Really,
you know?
Funny, too.
You see it all.
Yeah, there's no filter on him anywhere.
And funny as, funny as hell.
Huh. Spade told me once, I knew Spade a little when I got started, and he got some road work, and Emo and Judy Tenuta dated back in the day.
Oh, wow.
And if you don't know, you have to research who she is. She would go on in a prom dress. And have
I know. Oh, yeah.
And so... they dated and were a couple, and I remember, I think they were somewhere really nice in like San Diego where there was an improv, and the condo's on the beach. It's on Mission Beach. It's like a 3-bedroom condo. It's killer nice. Right. And so Spade gets there, and he thinks he's the first comic there, and he's yelling around, anybody home, doing the whole thing, walking around. And so he goes upstairs. He's just kind of getting the lay of the land. He goes upstairs, and like there's a big, nice, killer master bedroom with a balcony that overlooks Mission Beach. And, you know, next to that is a smaller bedroom, but it's still real nice. The window, the view overlooks the beach. So he's like, oh, shit, I've gone upstairs. I'm the MC. This is like, you know, year one of comedy for him.
Right.
And, the MC's always in the laundry room down by the living room, you know.
Yeah.
And so he goes down there figuring there's going to be this small bedroom off the stairs and opens it up. And it sure is. It's this tiny little room with a twin bed in it. And Emo and Judy Tenuta are sitting in the floor, and they've got their notebooks out, and there's little pieces of paper all over the room, and there's all kinds of little jokes and phrases and stuff written on the paper. And Spade literally almost bangs them with the door because they're sitting in the floor. Right. The door. And Emo and Judy look up, and they're like, we decided we were going to take this room for the week, so you just go on upstairs. So
they took the tiny room and
gave
him
the MC's
big master
room
suite.
And gave him and gave Spade the headliner's room, like week two of him getting paid in comedy. Cause
oh, that's awesome.
He called us all back in Arizona. He's like, dude, I'm on the fucking beach. I got a balcony. And then he goes, how weird is Emo and Judy? I don't know what's going on.
The two of them
in this room the whole time. And they're talking. All of a sudden, you hear some accordion music.
That's great.
That is totally. Oh, that's great, man. Yeah.
That's a real inside peek into a comedy.
I've seen him since. Yeah, I've seen.
That's
Emo
wild,
in
though.
LA.
It was perfect, though. It was perfect.
Yeah, but he was crying. I didn't know what he was talking about. I realized he was talking about my show that I just did.
Right.
I always feel like I'm bragging when I tell that.
No, you got to always remember that.
But that happened, you know, and that was a big deal, you know.
Sure, especially.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's good. And you know, there isn't a lot of that out there, of that kind of thing happening, where another fellow artist, especially one that's, you know, been in it.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Is moved or touched by what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually everybody's just
I remember
mad.
I met Rich.
Yeah, everyone's just mad. Like, yeah, whatever. They're over it before they've even seen it.
The typical reaction.
Sure.
I met Rich Voss, and I killed like, and afterwards he was like, how long you been doing this? I was like, I don't know, 3-4 years. He's like, go get me a coffee, right? That's the typical that's the typical reaction. Go get me a coffee.
Get me a coffee. Stu Kamens told me to go get him smokes once.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. Did I you punch him in the head?
I took his money and went to the cellar.
Yeah, good. Nice. There you go.
Never went back.
Thanks. I'll be right back.
He never said anything about it.
What's he going to say?
Yeah.
You can fold him up and put him in your pocket.
Yeah.
What's he going to do?
Oh, shit.
I feel more powerful than him.
Stu. So. He goes, what? He was on Brewer's thing for a while.
Seriously?
I went to do Brewer's show at Sirius, and Stu was sitting in there. And Stu goes, why does everybody come in here and look at me like they thought I was dead?
Because we thought you were dead.
Because we thought you were dead.
Because you were crazy. Kickboxing in Steinberg's office, the file cabinet.
He attacked the file cabinet?
Yeah, he attacked the file cabinet.
Oh, man. Shit. I feel like we could tell stories forever, the three of us, man. This has been great.
Yeah. Nah, buddy. We had other things we were going to steer it to, and then I don't know.
Yeah,
we had.
Like, we're a good combo, so it's great to have you again, Vic.
No, sure. Anytime,
that's Vic
boys.
Henley, everybody. Damn, great storyteller, great comedian, got a story for everything.
And we're still sitting on one that it took Ben 10 years to get permission for.
Yeah, that's right.
Next time.
Again, man. I like the tease.
Yeah.
Next time on Tall But True, well, on a future episode of Tall But True.
Yes, when we get Henley back.
Henley will be back, and we'll hear this crazy story from when D.C.
Yes, I want to be here for that for sure. We can sit on that, too. Right.
We'll save it for that. We have the illegal.
Right.
We could go
We
forever.
Just said earlier, weird stuff happens when you go out of the country.
I've been waiting so long. Yeah,
since
then.
Oh, that's a long time.
I've been waiting so long to tell that fucking story. Oh, my God.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Guys, thanks for listening to Tall But True. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. Check out therealbenbailey.com for my upcoming tour dates. I am Real Ben Bailey on all social media. DC and I will be at the Hollywood Improv in LA on June 2nd at 8 p.m. Book now.
We're hoping
to sell that thing out. Come on, it's going to be a fun show.
Yeah.
We're going to tape some episodes of Tall But True in LA with a bunch of LA comics and actors and people that I know and DC knows. So we got some great stuff coming up. Stay tuned. Henley, what have you got?
I'm VicHenley.com for the tour dates on there. And if there's nothing on the calendar out of town, it means I'm working here in New York City, and I'm at Vic Henley on Twitter and Instagram.
Go see Vic.
And I'm at Magoobies the first weekend of June. Magoobies in North Baltimore. And I think that's like 8, 9, and 10 or something like that.
Look it up, the Magoobies.
Yeah. DC, where are you going to be?
I just checked my Instagram. I mean, by the time this comes out, I'm going to the governor's this weekend, but, you know, I'm usually in the city if I haven't announced. So Real DC Benny and DCBenny.com.
All right, that's it for this episode of Tall But True. Come back for more great stories.